Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. For a number of years now, I've been mentioning to my supporters that there was this truly great leader called Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd. And I mentioned to people that this guy was absolutely hated by the Jews, and that you will find that there is a Jewish role, a critical Jewish role in his death. So this video is the first video in a series that will discuss all these different things, and you will get to see some things that are not even known to the whites of South Africa. We are going to get to the greatest secret, the greatest political secret in all of South African history. And that secret is to do with the death of this man. But first we're going to look at him to understand who he is and what he achieved. And then you will see that in actual fact what we have here is a second Adolf Hitler. This man at first might not appear to be a Nazi, but in actual fact I will show you that he was a closet Nazi. To some people, it wasn't so much of a secret, but he himself never said it. However, as you get to understand various things, you will see this guy was an absolute Nazi. And another thing about him is that this Nazi comes from Holland. He is Dutch. And his background is the following. His father was very upset by how the British treated the Boers. And after the Anglo-Boer War, the Second Anglo-Boer War, his father moved to South Africa. Verwoerd himself was born in Holland and then he grew up in South Africa. He even spent some time in Rhodesia and grew up there. And this man is extremely clever. Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd, in my opinion, is the greatest white leader that ever existed in Southern Africa. In the more than 300 years of a white presence in Southern Africa, if you of course include the Portuguese in Angola, then you're looking at 500 years, but in all these centuries of a white presence in Southern Africa, I rate this man as the greatest leader that ruled any country in Southern Africa. This is the most brilliant white man who ever ran South Africa or any of the neighboring states. For me, number two would be Ian Smith of Rhodesia, but Verwoerd, right at the top of the list. This man was extremely clever. And he was a Nazi. And you will find out, as we progress through this, you will see how this man worked to unite white people. South Africa is very much divided between the English, most of whom are of British descent, and the Boers and the Afrikaners. But Verwoerd worked like crazy to make the English become a part of the white race in South Africa so that the English and the Afrikaans can stick together and work together. And for him, South Africa belonged to the whites, all the whites, the English and the Afrikaans. And he went to great lengths to do that. And in the video footage you will see, in this video and other videos, when he speaks, you will see how eloquent he is in English, and he speaks sometimes specifically to the English, saying to them, you are part of this country and work with the Afrikaans people, stick together. Verwoerd himself, being of Dutch descent, he was accepted by the Boer Afrikaners, by the Boers and the Afrikaners. He was accepted in their society. And Verwoerd married a Danish woman. And when you understand more of his background, you'll see that he's got a good European background and he's transplanted into South Africa, but he fits in perfectly in South Africa and he's very energetic. This man is probably the most energetic leader that South Africa has ever had. He's got energy, determination, etc. He's also a Christian, but he's a Christian who is a no-nonsense Christian. He has his values, and you're not going to mess with his head. And you will see how clever this man was. You couldn't come and hoodwink him. You couldn't come and fool him. You couldn't come and con him. You'll see how absolutely brilliantly sharp he was. When people came at him with all kinds of racial junk, this man could see through it all. And you will actually see and hear in some of the quotes that come right out of his mouth, you'll see how he could see through the blacks, he could see through the communists, he could see through globalists. He saw everything. And he didn't let any of these people get in the way of what he wanted to do for South Africa. And in the years that he ruled South Africa, this man made South Africa totally rock. Other Boers have told me that most of South Africa's infrastructure that exists today was built in the time of Verwoerd. In that sense, it's a lot like Hitler. But this man had energy, he had determination, and when he ran South Africa was winning. And in the time that he ruled South Africa was right up there matching America, matching European countries, matching the best of the best in terms of quality, professionalism, high standard of living. It was an absolutely fantastic country back then. South Africa was first class, could match anybody in the world, and this man stood up to that nasty, devious country, Britain, where the Jewish elite of Britain have their never-ending hatred of white people. This man stood up to Britain, and the things that he pulled off in his time were amazing. This man saved the whites of South Africa. This man bought the whites of South Africa at least 34 years of white rule that they would otherwise never have had. But this man was hated, and the people who truly hated him, they hated him with an absolute wild vengeance, were the Jews. The Jews hated this man like you cannot believe. And then we'll get into the topic of how he was killed and the greatest secret in South African political history. So let's take a bit of a look at Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd. In the short videos that follow, you will get some insight into him. You will hear him speak. You will even see him cracking jokes. And you'll start to see how clever this man was. Verwoerd was born on the 8th of September 1901 in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, and he was murdered on the 6th of September. Can you believe, 2 days before his birthday, the 6th of September 1966, at the age of 64, in Cape Town. He was only married once, and he had 7 children. So, a really cool white guy. And this guy was brilliant. He was a professor in his 20s. He was a newspaper editor. But in his academic work, he was well known and well respected. And just to give you an idea of the places he studied at the University of Stellenbosch in South Africa, which is a very famous Afrikaans university in the Cape. He also studied at the University of Hamburg and at the University of Berlin and at the University of Leipzig. So he studied a lot in Germany. So that'll give you some idea of where this man comes from and why I say this man was a National Socialist. He also did some studies outside in other countries. I just want to show you that this guy was no goofball. This guy was seriously clever. And in the days of his academic career, he knew a lot. Just to mention a few things about his youth, he was born in Amsterdam in Holland, and his father was a shopkeeper and a deeply religious man. He moved to South Africa in 1903 because of his sympathy towards the Boers in the wake of the Second Boer War. So isn't that nice? His father actually moved from Holland to South Africa because he had a lot of sympathy for the Boers. So Verwoerd grew up in the Cape. Then in 1912, the Verwoerd family moved to Rhodesia, to Bulawayo, the second biggest city. His father was an evangelist in the Dutch Reformed Church, that's the Afrikaans Church, and Verwoerd attended Milton High School in Rhodesia. Then he got the Beit Scholarship, and Alfred Beit was a German Jew, by the way. Verwoerd got top marks for English literature. In fact, Verwoerd got the highest marks for English literature in the whole of Rhodesia. In 1917, his family moved back to South Africa, and then he lived in various places in South Africa. And just to give you an idea of the things he studied, on Wikipedia it says, Verwoerd studied at Stellenbosch University, where he was regarded as a brilliant academic, and wide claims were made that he possessed a photographic memory. He obtained his BA with distinction, majoring in sociology, psychology, philosophy, and then completed his MA cum laude. Verwoerd completed his doctorate in psychology in 1925 at Stellenbosch University. And his doctorate was titled, it was in Afrikaans, and it was titled The Blunting of the Emotion. Then Verwoerd was awarded other scholarships. Among the other places he went to study was the University of Oxford in England. And then he went to Germany. It says he wanted to study under a number of famous German psychology and philosophy professors of the time. Verwoerd left for Germany in 1926 and proceeded to research psychology and sociology at the University of Hamburg, Berlin, and Leipzig. In Hamburg, he studied under William Stern. In Berlin under Wolfgang Kohler and Otto Lippmann, and in Leipzig under Felix Krüger. Most of these professors were not allowed to teach anymore once the Nazis came to power. Well, here it says citation needed, so we don't know. It also says there are claims that Verwoerd studied eugenics during his German sojourn. For those who don't know, eugenics is how to breed better humans. That was some very advanced thinking in America and Germany in the 1920s. 100 years later, the world is totally insane. Jews have made it totally insane. But back then, whites in Germany and America were talking a lot about this. Anyway, it says here, claims that Verwoerd studied eugenics during his German sojourn and later based his apartheid policy on Nazi ideology are still in the process of being evaluated by scholars. So there are hints that he picked up a bunch of stuff from the Germans, and I'm sure he did. Just for the record, his wife Betsy, whom he married while he was in Germany. She lived in South Africa and she was of Danish descent. And after he died, much later, under black rule, she moved to the small town of Oranje, the little whites-only community in South Africa. So she moved to Oranje, and when she died in the year 2000, her house was turned into a little museum for him. And I've actually been in that little house. I went there in 2010, and I hope one day to be able to go back there. So let's just continue a bit with Verwoerd's academic achievements. Critics contend that eugenics was usually taught at medical faculties during this period. Christopher Marx asserts that Verwoerd kept a conspicuous distance from eugenic theories and racist social technologies, emphasizing environmental influences rather than hereditary abilities. But these things need to be looked into more. His fiancée Betsy, the Danish girl, joined him in Germany and they were married in Hamburg on 7th of January 1927. Later that year, he continued his studies in the United Kingdom and then proceeded to the United States. His lecture notes and memoranda at Stellenbosch University stressed that there were no biological differences between the big racial groups and concluded that this was not really a factor in the development of a higher social civilization by the Caucasians. This is what's written here in Wikipedia, but I don't know more details and one would need to look into this more. During the Depression in South Africa, Verwoerd did social work among poor white South Africans. It says he devoted much attention to welfare work and was often consulted by welfare organizations while he served on numerous committees. It also says that when he returned to South Africa in 1928, that he was appointed to the chair of applied psychology and psychotechnique at the University of Stellenbosch, where 6 years later he became a professor of sociology and social work. It points out that later Verwoerd was against the British and he was pro-Afrikaans and he wanted to keep as much distance as possible from Britain. But you'll see, this man is clever. This man may well have hidden some of his deeper feelings, because it is quite clear that he knows a lot about many things, and he's against the Jews. Let me show you how the world has changed in a mere 90 years. Back in the 30s, professors could talk openly against the Jews. You can't do that nowadays. So look at this. In 1936, Verwoerd, joined by a group of Stellenbosch University professors, protested against the immigration of German Jews to South Africa who were fleeing Nazi persecution. His efforts in the field of national welfare drew him into politics, and in 1936 he was offered the first editorship of Die Transvaaler, the Transvaaler. That's the newspaper, a position which he took up in 1937. With the added responsibility of helping to rebuild the National Party of South Africa in the Transvaal. So he and professors were against German Jews coming to South Africa. In the 1930s, he said a lot of stuff about Jews, this guy. That's why the Jews hated him so much. He was on to them. He was Jew-wise, and he'd spent a lot of time in Germany. Interestingly, Verwoerd was accused of being a Nazi, but you must know South Africa at that time was on the side of Britain. Very sad fact. But in 1943, Verwoerd, as the editor of Die Transvaaler, sued the English language newspaper The Star after it accused him of being a Nazi propagandist. In his judgment dismissing the case, Justice Mallon stated that Verwoerd did support Nazi propaganda. He did make his paper a tool of Nazis in South Africa, and he knew it. The source for all of this is a guy called Bunting, though. Bunting was an avid communist in South Africa. So some of these things are things one needs to research more. So this guy had to be careful of what he said, but he was no fool. The notion that he knew secrets and he knew how to behave himself, that is definitely the case. This guy was no idiot. But the bottom line is, you couldn't ask for a better qualified man to run a country than a man who knows sociology, which is the study of groups of humans, psychology, and all these things. This man was perfectly suited to running a country like this. I can't think of a better example of a man more qualified to do something like apartheid, and he knew what he was doing, why he was doing it, and what the benefits were. You couldn't ask for anybody cleverer than this to be pushing that type of politics and running the country. He knew exactly what he was doing. But Jews and liberals froth at the mouth. They hate him. They call him the architect of apartheid. They say he was evil and stupid and demented, but he was anything but that. In this short video, you will hear Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd describing what is apartheid. Apartheid, that word in Afrikaans means literally being apart. That's what it means. There is really nothing evil about the concept at all. He describes it as merely being good neighbors. In other words, from the American point of view, apartheid is nothing more, really, than segregation. And the real issue is that everybody else wants to be in on what the white man is doing. And yet there is nothing evil about the concept of doing something, being with your own people, and minding your own business, and not sticking your nose into other people's affairs. There's nothing oppressive about it. Yet Jews, liberals, and communists have managed to take a concept that is really nothing evil or hideous, and they've managed to take it and twist it completely out of context, so that the whites of South Africa have to constantly be on their back foot defending themselves, trying to explain things, trying to say it in another way, trying to reword it. It's all nonsense. It's pure rubbish. Verwoerd uses the term good neighborliness, which you will hear. And when I knew P.W. Botha, he also used the same term and described it in that way. But when I was a kid, in the 1970s, the term that I heard over and over again when I was younger, in the 70s and 80s, was the term separate development. And I must tell you that I regard separate development as the most accurate explanation of apartheid that is there. Because it is about leave the black man to develop the way he wants to develop. Leave the white man to develop the way he wants to develop. Somehow, Jews and liberals have managed to take that and turn that into a crime. But it's not a crime. If you live in your house and you do in your house what you want to do, and your neighbor lives in his house and he does what he wants to do, there's nothing evil about it. If inside your house you want to paint your walls white, but inside your neighbor's house he wants the walls to be painted green, there's nothing evil about that. In fact, people would call it freedom. If You have the right to do inside your house what you want to do in your house. You want carpets, but your neighbor wants tiles. You want the walls white, but your neighbor wants it green. You would call that freedom. You'd call that the right to choosing your own things. Well, that is exactly what apartheid was. However, the unspoken story is that everybody wanted in on what belonged to the whites, what the whites had created and managed and ordered and brought into being. Everybody else wanted in on the pie that the white man had created for himself. And no, nobody else wanted to go and make a pie for themselves. They all wanted in on the white man's pie. So listen to Verwoerd.
Our policy is one which is called by an Afrikaans word apartheid. And I'm afraid that has been misunderstood so often. It could just as easily, and perhaps much better, be described as a policy of good neighborliness, accepting that there are differences between people. But while these differences exist, and you have to acknowledge them, at the same time, you can live together, aid one another, but that it can best be done when you act as good neighbors always do.
In this short video, Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd talks at the time that South Africa becomes a republic. People in South Africa, quite a number of people, have got the wrong idea about what happened with this business of making South Africa a republic. South Africa was a dominion. South Africa was under British control. It was not quite a colony, but Britain had a lot of power over South Africa and drove policy in South Africa. South Africa was a dominion like Canada and Australia. Now, something else that you must keep in mind is that Dr. Verwoerd was one of the three main guys in the early days of apartheid who were the initial prime ministers of South Africa. They belonged to a political party called the National Party. The National Party had basically come to power with the goal of taking control of white politics and driving it in a path that was going to work for white people. They were also anti-Semitic. They were against the Jews. Now, the first prime minister was a Christian priest called D.F. Malan. And after him, the next prime minister was a guy called J.G. Strydom, also an Afrikaans guy. And they used to call him the Lion of the North. He was very popular. Now, Strydom ruled South Africa from 1954 to 1958. But he died while he was in office. And that is how Verwoerd then became the third prime minister in the time of apartheid from the National Party. And this is how Verwoerd then suddenly came to become the prime minister. I just want to read a little bit about Strydom from Wikipedia, just to give you a bit of background to this issue of South Africa becoming a republic. Because these people in the National Party, they were part of a secret society called the Broederbond, the Brotherhood, you could call it. And this Brotherhood set out to dominate South African politics. And it drove apartheid and white domination from 1948 until the whites lost power in 1994. So this is what it says in Wikipedia. On 30 November 1954, he, this is Strydom, was elected leader of the National Party and became Prime Minister of South Africa after the resignation of Malan, and against the latter's will, Malan preferred the more moderate Havenga, Minister of Finance, as his successor. So let me just pause there. Malan clearly wasn't too keen on this Strydom guy. But Strydom and Verwoerd are strong characters. These are probably the strongest leaders in the history of modern South Africa. And you'll see why I say that. So it says, Strydom was popular among National Party members, and people trusted him to push things smoothly forward towards a republic, something Malan was considered to be only lukewarm about. So let me just pause there. Then already they had this idea that South Africa must move away from being a British dominion to being an independent republic. So let me continue. During Strydom's term as Prime Minister, he began moves to sever ties with the British monarchy and deepened the Afrikaner ascendancy in South Africa while strengthening the policy of apartheid. So you see, he was already starting to cut the ties with Britain, because the British, in the position where they were, where South Africa was a dominion, Britain had a lot of say in South Africa's policies, and these Afrikaans guys were trying to get South Africa away from Jewish-controlled Britain. And these white men wanted to run South Africa themselves for the benefit of whites. So it continues. With regard to racial policies, he believed strongly in the perpetuation of white minority rule, and during his term, coloured voters, that is mixed race people, were removed from the common voters' roll and put on a separate coloured voters' roll, something that Malan started to do but could not push through. So let me just pause there. So you see, this Strydom guy, he's got a lot more oomph and power than Malan, and he's pushing things through that Malan was too weak to do. So let's continue. Strydom was an open proponent of crude baaskap. This is an Afrikaans word, and it basically boils down to white supremacy or white domination. So you see, these white guys, they weren't mucking around. They believed in their position, they believed in their supremacy, etc. He didn't muck around. He must be in charge. So it continues. The extended treason trial of 156 activists, including Nelson Mandela, involved the Freedom Charter, happened during Strydom's term in office. Now listen to this. He also managed to further extend the NP's parliamentary seats during the general election in 1958. Strydom's government also severed diplomatic relations with the Soviet Union. Let me just pause there. The Soviet Union was busy using its embassy in South Africa to already engage in activities to build up the communist element among the blacks. And the whites uncovered this and kicked the Soviets out of South Africa. So this all happened under Strydom, the Lion of the North. He was a determined bloke. And it says here, during his last year in office, his weak health, thought to be cancer, led to long terms of absence, and he died on 24 August 1958 in Cape Town and is buried in Pretoria in the Heroes Acre. So a little bit strange there. I'm always wondering whether people are poisoned and so forth, but anyhow, so they say he died of an illness. Just another note, it says he was nicknamed the Lion of the North because of his aggression and forthrightness. So Strijdom was a tough guy and a determined guy. And he was well aware of this notion of moving towards a republic. So I want you to just see a little video, a news item from that time where they talk about Strijdom and they talk about the notion that South Africa is going to become a republic at some time in the future.
This is Movietone, Lionel Gamlin reporting. It was at the Raadsaal in Pretoria that the successor to Dr. Malan was chosen, and near the statue of Paul Kruger, a big crowd naturally collected. Presently they saw 72-year-old Mr. Havinghaar come out supported by two friends. He had been nominated but had almost at once withdrawn. It was clear that the majority were in favour of Mr. Strijdom as South Africa's fifth Prime Minister. Johannes Strijdom, who is 61, has the reputation of being an extreme Afrikaner nationalist. Indeed, he's reported as saying that the Union must one day become a republic.
Then, with this rise, this Jewish communist rise in the so-called desire for one man, one vote, and so-called wars of liberation, Britain overnight decided to dump its entire empire. That's a separate topic that I'll discuss later, and the reasons why I believe Britain dumped its empire. But the bottom line is that the British Prime Minister, Macmillan, came to South Africa and he gave a speech in the South African Parliament called the Winds of Change speech. In that speech, he basically said Britain is getting out of Africa and that Africa will be handed over to the blacks and whites have to accept this. This was something that horrified the whites of the time. The whites in Rhodesia, the whites in South Africa. But Rhodesia was a colony, and South Africa was a dominion. And Verwoerd was the leader of South Africa at that time. And very quickly, within about a year, Verwoerd made a lightning move. Verwoerd went and managed to get the whites to vote for becoming a republic, as opposed to remaining under British rule. And he pulled it off. And the majority of whites, the Afrikaans and the English, as a majority, voted for this thing. Now this thing was an absolute act of political genius. And I would describe it as the greatest political move made by any white leader in Southern Africa in the last 60 years. By making South Africa a republic, South Africa broke away from Britain and South Africa was internationally recognized as an independent state. Not only was it an independent state, but it was an independent state where a minority of whites ruled the blacks and the whole world accepted that. Everybody accepted it. There are all kinds of nonsense conspiracy theories about why he did this, etc. But the reality is, if he did not do that, then Britain could have told the whites of South Africa, you are going to hand South Africa over to black rule, and the whites would have had no choice in the matter. So Verwoerd beat the British to the punch, and he was really fast. Macmillan was here in 1960, and by 1961, Verwoerd had completed his move of speedy brilliance. By doing what he did, Verwoerd probably bought the whites of South Africa 35 years of white rule. If he had not done that, the British, within less than 10 years, would have ordered the whites to hand over the country to the blacks. They would have had no choice. except through rebellion. And it is in Rhodesia to the north where the whites did not have self-rule and were not a republic and were not recognized as an independent state, that the whites had to rebel openly against the British. And why the Rhodesians didn't get to self-rule, that's a separate story. But it contrasts the difference between South Africa and Rhodesia. And it shows the speed and brilliance of the South African move that saved South Africa and allowed South Africa to function from 1961 until 1994 as a white-run state. Rhodesia, on the other hand, within a short few years, was already at loggerheads with Britain and openly rebelling against Britain. That happened in 1965. So Verwoerd's act of genius bought the whites of South Africa at least 35 or 45 years of white rule, something which I'm grateful for because I managed to come here and live here in the last 14 years of that time. And make no mistake, I appreciated it very much, let me tell you. Finally, listen to Verwoerd talking in his friendly way about the Western world. Look at how totally friendly he is with the Western world. South Africa is a part of the Western world. Verwoerd had excellent relations with the entire Western world, with America, with Britain, with Europe. There is a speech of Verwoerd in 1958 where Verwoerd actually said that South Africa must remain a white man's country. He said that openly. And notice his friendliness and openness, saying anybody can have anything that they want and South Africa will work with them. They'll work with whites and they'll work with blacks. Finally, Verwoerd speaks about a very interesting concept. He says that the future is a commonwealth of nations of Southern Africa. And that is very deep and brilliant. But of course, the blacks weren't interested in any of that nonsense. A separate topic that I would like to do sometime is to show you the many ideas that the whites of Southern Africa had for reorganizing the countries of Southern Africa. In the same way that Verwoerd was proposing a commonwealth, there were things that happened in Rhodesia with the British and the Rhodesians and the blacks. There were things that the Portuguese had in mind. There were so many wonderful ideas. Countries that were either temporarily created or countries that were proposed, and unions between countries that were talked about. There were so many things that whites discussed and that whites were going to do. Whites in Southern Africa were busy redrawing borders, and South Africa itself was at the forefront of this concept of redrawing borders. In fact, South Africa's concept could have and should have been applied across all of Africa. That's how deep this stuff was. The whites were thinking thoughts that nobody else was daring to think, and the whites knew how to do it. But communists, Jews, blacks, and liberals were all against all the wonderful ideas of the whites. So listen to the brilliant ideas of this man who pulled off the greatest feat, the greatest political feat that saved the whites of South Africa and bought them unbelievable amounts of time.
The Republic is the only sure and stable friend that the Western nations have in Africa. We are here to stay, and we are here to aid all others in whatever they may need and can get from us.
we have for a very long time developed in South Africa a nation of our own, friendly, prosperous, progressive. We hope that the rest of Africa will become likewise. Fortunately, even former opponents of the Republic, those who were in favor of a monarchy, are now prepared to give it full loyalty and cooperation. We are very happy to be a united people. Of course, there has been sensational journalism and conditioned reporting, which created the impression that there would be great difficulties ahead of us. We have no doubt that all this will pass. Certain restricted measures had to be taken recently, mainly to ensure the protection of the masses, of all races, who seek peace and order. The record of stable government will continue in South Africa. Surely it must be a record, 6 prime ministers and only 5 changes of government in 50 years. However, in the future, we will seek the same form of stability in government, in the Republic, which should ensure stability too in the economic life of the country. Not for us, the sudden constitutional upheavals which created dictatorships in certain parts of Africa, chaos in the Congo, and forms of multiracial government elsewhere which only create the desire for domination by one over the other, without any economic certainty developing. We seek the gradual development of each of our groups in a certain direction. Here the solution is sought by openly retaining the white man's guiding hand, which elsewhere is the hidden guarantee of industrial development and even good administration. Here we follow the example of the nations in creating separate chances of development for each of our racial groups. We seek to give the opportunity for cooperation in a novel way by the creation of a Commonwealth of Southern Africa as our ultimate aim. And in this Commonwealth, cooperation and consultation will be able to take place between all racial groups on the highest level. May this peace and prosperity and aid to all be made possible by the cooperation of our friends in the Western nations.
In this little video, Dr. Verwoerd asks, what is our future? And he's speaking to whites. In South Africa, the division between whites are the Afrikaans speakers, mostly the Boers, and the English speakers, who are of British descent, who came to the British colonies, and some of them even lived among the Boers in their Boer republics. So in South Africa, the Boers and the Afrikaans speakers always had to stand up for themselves because nobody else would, and because Britain ruled the roost in many situations. So in South Africa, due to the Anglo-Boer War and due to British machinations, there was hatred between the Boers and the English, which is understandable. However, here is Verwoerd, and Verwoerd is talking about all whites sticking together, that all whites together own South Africa, that the English and the Afrikaans speakers together own this country. And then he ends by talking about the tremendous racial problem that exists in South Africa, and that these whites have to work together to find solutions to it. However, the tremendous racial problems of South Africa that he faced and that the whites have faced are as nothing compared to the new racial problems of America, Britain, and Europe that the Jews have created for the whites in those countries and those regions. There they've gone and thrown in people from all across the world to create a situation that is even worse than the 11 languages of South Africa. What lies ahead for North America is going to be quite nasty. But at this time, when Favut was alive, things in the West had not deteriorated to that level. The West was still in a lot better shape. And in the future, whites everywhere across the Western world will be looking to find out what it is that the whites of South Africa knew and did and thought. Because the problems they were trying to solve are problems that now are going to be everybody's problems. It's going to be a worse nightmare outside South Africa than what the whites of South Africa had to face. And I still think that in time to come, whites everywhere will look on the works of the whites of South Africa, especially concepts like apartheid, etc., and whites will realize that these whites in South Africa, they were way ahead of the game. And when it comes to race relations and white-black relations, nobody knows more about it than the whites of Southern Africa. All of us together, the Portuguese, the Rhodesians, South Africans, we know all about race, big time. And we were right about it.
What is our future? And I want to make quite sure that I will not be misunderstood. I am not using this occasion as a platform for putting forward ideas other than those which I hope will help to bring unity, prosperity, and happiness to South Africa. I see our republic, the republic of the English and the Afrikaans speaking alike, governing what is the heritage of white South Africa, joined together as one by the very task set them at this time. Through this unity, cooperating in solving its special problem of race relations, so totally different from problems anywhere else in the world.
In this short video, you will see Favut at his finest. He is not only a truly brilliant man who can't be fooled, he's also funny. You're going to see a side of Favut that is really fantastic. Everybody thinks all these politicians of South Africa were drab and boring. But I suppose whites in general are boringly honest. But Favut really shows his brilliance in this video. At the beginning of the video, he speaks a bit in Afrikaans, and I'll just tell you what he says. Remember that Favut himself is Dutch. He was born in the Netherlands, and in this little short clip that you're going to see, he's going to be talking about the blacks and the future. And here you will see how clever this man was. You couldn't pull a fast one on this man. He knew exactly what he was talking about all those decades ago. The claim of these communists was that the blacks wanted one man, one vote. All they wanted was freedom. But the fact of the matter was that the Soviet Union and China were supporting them, and they were under obligation to implement communism. And all the blacks who fought in Southern Africa, in Angola, in Mozambique, in Rhodesia, in Southwest Africa, in South Africa, all of them were communists. They studied communism, they believed in communism, their goal was to turn these countries into communist states. And the Soviet Union was the main sponsor, the Jewish-controlled Soviet Union. And they said they want freedom and one man, one vote. And even the stupid British later said, no, they're not terrorists, they're freedom fighters. But here you're going to see what Verwoerd says. And he talks about the fact that this is going to be about black domination. Here I am sitting in 2020. And if you look at the ruling party of South Africa today, you'll see that they drove out even the non-blacks who were in there. There were Indians, etc. in there. And it's become ever more black. And I can show you later other evidence from Russia that back in 1927, blacks from South Africa, headed by a colored man, went to Russia and asked if they would support the idea of South Africa as a black communist republic. And in 1928, Stalin gave the order to the white communists of the Communist Party and told them, this is the Communist Party of South Africa, and told them that South Africa must become a black republic, a black communist republic. Those were the orders in 1928. White communists did not like it because most of the Communist Party was run by whites at the time. So everything Verwoerd is telling you here has been proven true. Furthermore, he says that they want one-party states. You will hear Jews and liberals lying as usual, saying that South Africa is a democratic state. This is not the case. South Africa has been ruled by the same political party since 1994. That is 26 years of unbroken rule. If you go and you look at Zimbabwe, which formerly was Rhodesia, that country too has been ruled by the same political party since 1980. And if you go to the Portuguese colonies or former colonies of the Portuguese of Mozambique and Angola, they too are ruled by the same political parties that took power in 1974. From 1974 until the year 2020, those same black political parties are still ruling those countries. And the same is true for Namibia, which used to be Southwest Africa. Communists took over there in 1989, and they are still ruled by the same political party. In other words, South Africa, Southwest Africa, Angola, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe, five countries in Southern Africa where black communists came to power, are still ruled to this day by the same political party that took over from the whites. There has never been a change of government in those five countries. The whites of Rhodesia, and here you will hear Verwoerd himself talking about it, all said that these people are going to create one-party states. And we are fighting against black communists who are going to take control and never lose power. And in 2020, this is completely and utterly true. So in the case of Angola and Mozambique, that went under black rule the first, that is in 1974, those countries have been ruled by communist parties for 46 years. You won't hear one Jew, one liberal, or one black complaining about this matter. The blacks of Southern Africa have been captured by communists, and they themselves cannot get out from under the rule of these communists. The fact that they pretend to be pro-Western and some of them are stinking rich and corrupt and all that, don't be fooled by any of that. These blacks have seen to it that no other political opposition arises. And in all these countries, any black political opposition that arises is destroyed. They destroy them. They wipe them out. And they've been doing this for decades. And nobody ever turns around and says, oh, do you remember? Do you remember those whites of Southern Africa? They said that they were fighting communism. They said they were fighting against blacks who were not going to implement democracy, against blacks who were going to introduce one-party states. Nobody ever tells you that the whites were right. And you're about to hear what Verwoerd says. And he's funny. So he's not only brilliant, he's funny. I wish I could get all of his speeches. I don't know where these things were cut out from, but these are fantastic snippets. Listen to Verwoerd. He talks to them in English. He tells them up front that he's going to speak to the audience in English because it may help them to understand more clearly. He is reaching out to the English-speaking whites of South Africa. This man set out to unite all the whites. And guess what? The only, quote, whites who didn't like him were the Jews. Only the Jews had a problem with this man. Only the Jews had a problem with white unity. The English and the Afrikaans speakers got along fine, and this man went to great lengths to achieve this. So listen to him. He's at his most brilliant and at his finest in this short video. I wish I could get all his speeches. I have a book of his speeches, but unfortunately there's nothing about Jews in there. So listen to him. This man is way ahead of his time. He and Ian Smith and others from that time, they knew exactly what they were doing and they were totally right. And history has proven them right. But you won't hear a Jew or a liberal or anybody else coming out and admitting the truth. The truth being that the whites were right all along. And all the events after all this time have proven the whites to be right.
Ons plan om vanaand vir die grootste gedeelte in Engels te praat, ter wille van diegene in die gehoor wat dat dan misschien beste sal verstaan wat ek vanaand te sê. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish to... What they want of South Africa, it is not only one man, one vote, it is black overlordship. Pure and simple. One man, one vote would only be a means. The objective could be the ultimate destruction of any man, any vote. In order to achieve black dictatorship, a one-party system as they call it, which they say, as Nkrumah has said, as has been said in Kenya and Tanganyika, a one-party system, which is the natural system for Africa. That would be their aim. No man, no vote.
We're going to end this video by listening to a tribute to Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd that was made immediately after his death. And this tribute will give you an idea of the achievements of this man and what this man did in the time that he ruled South Africa. If he'd not been killed, then who knows where South Africa and Rhodesia could have been. This man was a very, very determined white man, and he was so successful. But his personal genius could have helped all of us. When he died, the Western world, of course, didn't want to have anything to do with him. Just the kind of thing you'd expect of Adolf Hitler. To my knowledge, the only head of state who came to his funeral was Ian Smith of Rhodesia. But I want to discuss this tribute to Verwoerd. And I especially want to go over some aspects of this tribute to Verwoerd. Because I want to make sure that people outside South Africa and people not familiar with the history of South Africa understand some of the things that are in this tribute. Before apartheid, which united white people. There was a lot of animosity between the Boers and the English speakers of South Africa. And of course, among the English were the Jews. So you had this British element with this Jewish element, and they were at loggerheads with the Boers. And there was a lot of animosity between the whites. The whites were very divided. But apartheid brought them together, and Verwoerd in particular was the most successful of the, let's call it, Afrikaans leaders. Even though he himself was originally born in Holland, he was extremely successful at winning over the English speakers. And so in this tribute that you will hear, virtually the entire tribute is in English, and there are many occasions where English-speaking South Africans are talking. Now, a term that will be used a lot in this tribute is a reference to the Bantu. And I just want to clarify that the Bantu, B-A-N-T-U, Bantu is the proper name for the black-skinned people of Africa. The Bantu are people who originate from far in the north of Africa, in West Africa. And they came down through Africa over about 2,000 years, and they reached South Africa, more or less at the same time that the whites got here. But the whites got to the Cape first, and these blacks were starting to move in from the north. And the blacks and the whites met at the Great Fish River in the Eastern Cape, with the whites going north and the blacks coming south. So, despite everything they tell you about South Africa, no, the Bantu people have not lived in South Africa for millions of years. That is not true. They too are colonizers. You get the people known as the Bushmen, or otherwise known as the Sand People. These types of people were in South Africa long before the whites and the blacks came. But they are few in number and were just overridden by either the whites or the blacks. And in actual fact, most of them had been hunted down by the blacks who were coming down through Africa. They used to chase and hunt down the Bushmen. And the Bushmen hated the blacks, and when war came between the whites and the blacks, the Bushmen all sided with the whites. But the key issue here is that Bantu, meaning these black-skinned people that you associate with Africa, Bantu are not native to South Africa. They are not native to Southern Africa. And even Central Africa, they've only been in Central Africa for maybe 1,000 years or so. And in the time of apartheid, especially in the time of Verwoerd, they didn't talk about blacks, they spoke about Bantu. And so I just want to make it clear to you that that is what the term is. And he himself was the minister of Bantu affairs. He actually ruled and looked after the blacks of South Africa for a time. And he had extensive contact with them, as you will discover. So he's not somebody who doesn't know what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He's brilliant, in fact. And in this audio, you will hear that there are even blacks who pay tribute to him. Another thing is that this is an audio from a radio program. In the 60s and until about the mid-70s, South Africa did not have TV. It was the policy of the apartheid government to not bring TV to South Africa because they believed that TV would damage society. And now that you know more about history yourself, I think you'll agree that it was a wise move on the part of the South Africans. So the irony is that places like Rhodesia, which were more backward than South Africa, that when I grew up there was TV. It was black and white TV when I was a kid. And when South Africa got TV in about 1974, 1975, it was color TV. But the whites deliberately kept TV away because they saw it as a negative influence. And now that you know who runs the world's mass media, I'm sure you'll agree that it was a wise move. So this radio tribute that you're going to hear, the whole thing is done very well, and you'll hear all kinds of things in it. But you just need to also be aware that at that point in time, white South Africans only listened to radio. That was their only mass means of communication. No TV. Though I must tell you, given Verwoerd's eloquence, I think he would have had a really great presence on TV. Because you'll see from the film footage that he's an impressive guy. Verwoerd is a first-class intellectual. First-class European intellectual, and the whites of South Africa were functioning at the peak of their intellectual ability. They were right up there on a par with the British, Americans, anybody else. In this tribute, there is one man who speaks with quite a heavy Afrikaans accent, and he talks about trips that he did with Verwoerd and how tired Verwoerd was at a point. And this man talks about traveling with Verwoerd. I cannot be certain, but I think this man might be his personal secretary. Verwoerd had a private secretary, a male, who worked for him for 13 years. And later on in this series, you will get to hear what this private secretary wrote about Verwoerd. You'll get to hear the full Verwoerd story from his private secretary, and I think it will blow you away. But in here, you might actually be listening at a point to his private secretary when he talks about how tired Verwoerd is and his wife and so forth. So just a thing to keep an eye open for. Now, in this tribute, they make an interesting statement. They say that after World War II, the attacks on South Africa increased, and that as the years went by, suddenly the whites of South Africa find themselves coming under ever more criticism and attack from worldwide sources. From all across the world, these whites of South Africa are coming under attack. There is a book that I've got written in South Africa in the 60s, and the book is called Whites Are People Too. And in that book, another Afrikaans man writes a very interesting section, which I may want to return to at some point in the future, where he talks about the conspiracy against all the whites of Southern Africa. And this is from back in the 1960s. So I just want to point out that in the 1960s, when I was a baby, the whites of Southern Africa were already the focus of attacks coming even from the Western world. And of course, you can imagine from the globalist Jews. And these whites of Southern Africa were finding themselves ever more isolated from the world. Now, I should add as well that since Germany lost World War II, not through any fault of their own, these people tried their utmost. They fought with a heroism and a determination that is almost unmatched in history. That is right up there, that can match the Romans, the Germans, you name it. But the fact that Germany was defeated really means that we lost the only country in the Western world that was willing to stand up for whites. And that once Germany was gone, you've got the Jewish agenda in place. And that once Germany is gone, the whites of Southern Africa can now be picked off because they're easy pickings. We aren't large in number, and the whole world can gang up on us and destroy us. But if Germany had been around, might have been a whole different kettle of fish. So you need to see the events in Southern Africa, of the whites in Southern Africa, in that context. That before the battle has begun, you've got the Soviet Union with Jewish influence, you've got America and Britain with Jewish influence, you've got Europe that is trying to piece itself together after World War II and being invaded by everybody. And so the stand that the whites make against communism, against the blacks, against liberalism, etc., that this stand is already doomed. But even so, the whites put up a big fight for decades to come. And Verwoerd has helped to lay the groundwork for it. But I just wanted to make it clear to you that they do mention in here how the animosity and the hostility suddenly comes to South Africa after World War II. And they themselves have taken part in World War II and gone and fought the Italians and fought the Germans, helping mighty Blighty and Britain and all these others. And then these South Africans find that they're on the menu. They're on the menu. And that all those things that they did to help the Allies is forgotten and of no consequence. They've gone to fight for nothing. So it's a stupid game. Everybody who was on the Allied side in World War II, including the Rhodesians, all these people had no idea that they were just being used and abused, and later everybody would be kicked straight in the teeth. Now, in this tribute, you'll also hear another man, an Englishman, speak, and he speaks about the winds of change. The winds of change are blowing through Africa, and we have to accept these things. And that is Macmillan, the Prime Minister of Britain, and he is busy handing over all of the British Empire in Africa to the blacks. And then you'll also hear him talking about how there are things that the South Africans are doing that does not fall in line with the British policy. And so in this tribute, you'll actually hear Verwoerd responding to this. Verwoerd says that you must be careful in your ethics that something that is good for one person, for one group, may be very bad for another group. And he says, if you want justice for the blacks, see to it that there's also justice for the whites. Verwoerd stood straight up to Britain, and later, when we look at what his private secretary wrote about him, you will see how incredible it was. He went and he stood up, not only to Britain, but to the whole Commonwealth. They treated him like scum. He stood his ground. He fought back for South Africa. And then he removed South Africa from the entire British Commonwealth. And he charted his course alone for the whites of South Africa. And you'll see they talk in terms of honor, etc. Very European. Very European. The South Africans are behaving like first-class Europeans. And of course, the British, in this tribute, they also talk about, well, you see, there are these free men. And the free men that they're talking about are the blacks. The blacks are going to be given their freedom, and Britain is doing all this good stuff for the blacks, etc. But that's just all British claptrap. Another thing where Verwoerd stands up is Verwoerd even stands up, and in this case it's similar to Hitler. He says that the blacks, the black nationalists, and the black nationalists are the blacks who now want their own countries, and he says that it was the white man who educated these people. It was the white man who brought them up and got them to this level of thinking. And in that sense, he's actually literally quoting Hitler, because in Mein Kampf, Hitler also talks about how the blacks get credit for all kinds of things when in fact the real thing is that it's the success of the white man's educational system that is the real thing here. So, very similar attitude to Hitler in that sense. Verwoerd also talks very proudly about South Africa, and these whites are saying this is our only motherland. In that sense, they are like all whites. When whites go out and they settle somewhere and they build a country, then whites are like freaking trees. They grow roots and they settle in a country and you can't move them. And the Boers are like that. It's very much a European thing. It is that natural patriotism of whites for their own state. In the tribute, they talk about Verwoerd turning South Africa into a republic. This is a very critical thing. We have discussed this, but here it is mentioned again. And I repeat, that is the greatest feat of politics of any politician in Southern Africa in the last 60 or 70 years. I would say the next best thing to this was Rhodesia rebelling against Britain. But in the case of Verwoerd, he did a stunning thing by recognizing immediately that the British are a problem and they're going to force the whites to hand over to the blacks. And they got to get the whites away. And so they turn South Africa into a republic and they manage to get the hell out of a trap that otherwise all the whites of South Africa would have fallen into. Then they also mention the first attempt to kill him. They don't mention the killer. The killer, or the guy who wants to kill him, is a guy called Pratt. Pratt is an Englishman. And he is very familiar with the Jews. That is another topic we will discuss later. But Pratt and the Jews are big buddies. And Pratt is a total liberal, etc. Then in this tribute also, there is a brilliant, brilliant statement by Verwoerd, which applies to modern America, but it also has applied to all the whites, all of us who've lost everything, where Verwoerd says that these foreigners, these globalists, all these enemies of South Africa, that they expect the whites of South Africa to give in gradually. And he warns that if you start giving in gradually and gradually stepping back, that you are going to lose everything. And he talks about what a nightmare it's going to be when you go down that path. That is very similar to Ian Smith of Rhodesia, who used to talk about going on the slippery slope of appeasement. Ian Smith didn't like that. He spoke about appeasement, and he said once you're on that slippery slope, you're just going downhill. But Verwoerd actually says it much better here. And what he's saying applies right now, especially to America, where whites are turfed out and blacks and Jews and others are moved into high positions and white Americans are being lied to and they're being told, no, if you do this, then things are going to be better, then the blacks aren't going to fight you, etc. Do this because what they did under apartheid was wrong, what the Nazis did is wrong, what the colonialists did is wrong. All that is hogwash. All that is total and utter hogwash. Total hogwash. Americans, you're being lied to, you're being tricked. You are actually putting the rope around your neck and you're being told it's a good thing. And it's not a good thing. And what Verwoerd says in here, he's describing it exactly. Also in here, they point out that in 1962, Verwoerd created the first black independent country inside South Africa called the Transkei. They gave blacks their own country with its own constitution. It had everything. Blacks could rule themselves in this country. This was the first of a number of countries that they created. The Transkei was the first. And these whites did it. And again, you will hear Favut talk about separate development, etc. That is very wise stuff. And so, just to remind you, when all this other gumph came about blacks ruling South Africa, blacks ruling Rhodesia, all these other countries that were previously run by whites, that whites have got experience with blacks. We know how black rule goes. We knew it back then. Here it was already being tried in South Africa in 1962. However, it had already been tried in the Cape by Cecil John Rhodes, the Freemason who was working for Rothschild. It had already been tried freaking 50 or 60 years before in the Cape. Whites are well aware of the abilities of the blacks and of their failures. And another final critical thing in this tribute that I must draw your attention to is another brilliant feat of Favut. They tell you that the OAU, the Organization of African Unity, which basically was a communist Soviet front, the OAU was hostile to South Africa and Liberia and Ethiopia, which are the only two countries in Africa that were never colonized. Liberia being composed of blacks from America returning to Africa, and Ethiopia, which is up there by Egypt. Those two countries went to the International Court in The Hague and laid charges against South Africa over its policies of apartheid in Southwest Africa. Now, Southwest Africa is formerly the German colony of Southwest Africa, and it is now known as Namibia. But in World War I, when Germany lost all its colonies, South Africa was given control by the League of Nations, which was the forerunner to the United Nations. South Africa was given control of Southwest Africa. So these two African countries went to the International Court in The Hague in Holland, and they basically laid charges against South Africa, saying that apartheid is oppressive. And Favut assembled a team of attorneys, and they went and they fought this court case in The Hague with energy. And apartheid won. The International Court in The Hague found that apartheid is not oppressive. And it also threw the case out, saying that Liberia and Ethiopia have got no interest in this part of the world. It's none of their business anyway. But this is an amazing feat, and it's a feat that few South Africans even know about, is that apartheid did go on trial, and apartheid was found to be not oppressive by the International Court in The Hague. So here is this excellent tribute to Favut after his death, and this will give you an idea of the amazing things that this white leader got up to as he struggled to keep South Africa going in a world where communism was starting to surge. The Soviet Union and China, pumped up by the events of World War II, the Soviet Union up to their eyeballs in military stuff and technology, out to conquer the world, to continue with the Jewish Bolshevik idea to conquer the whole world, and they were coming to Africa, and the Chinese were here, and here is Favut trying to steer South Africa along a path of peace. And you'll even hear tributes from blacks in this thing. So this will give you an idea of what a fantastic man this guy was. And after this video, we will revisit Verwoerd in other videos, and you will see and hear more about him.
Man of Destiny. We invite you to listen to a program of tribute to the late Dr. H.F. Verwoerd.
Fallen at length, that tower of strength, which stood four square to all the winds that blew.
Regard this man, called upon to give direction to his land in a world where in a few brief years the history of centuries is being rewritten.
Only when upheld by the blessing of the Almighty and the confidence of his people can a leader give of his best, physically and spiritually, every moment of his life. In this spirit, I dedicate myself to my country, South Africa.
These were the words with which Hendrik Verwoerd, on September the 3rd, 1958, accepted office as the 6th Prime Minister of South Africa. But see him first as Minister of Bantu Affairs, the architect of a South Africa where, together, white and non-white, could each build their own future. The man who gave substance to the vision of separate freedoms for the different peoples within our national borders.
But it is not only the white man in South Africa who claims as an inalienable right that his nation must be permitted to survive and to retain its own distinctive identity, its own culture and institutions. The black man is equally intent upon safeguarding the national heritages of each of his different nations. The South African government has, in the light of all this, chosen the only alternative, namely the self-realization to the utmost extent possible for each group. This means that it is willing to grant to the Bantu nations of South Africa the opportunity to work out their own destinies, just as this was desired by and granted to new states in other parts of Africa and Asia.
As a Zulu, this is how I saw it. I found confidence in Dr. Verwoerd first when he organized the removal of the slums, when he placed the Bantu in their own respectable townships and gave them an opportunity to make their own livings there. Today, I have my own business there. The progress that we Bantus have made was a living proof for us of his integrity.
On one occasion, he said, "Development and culture cannot be given to a community as a ready-made product. The community must achieve it by their own efforts, by working at it heart and soul, day by day."
He loved his own nation deeply, and so he had a great respect for other nations, and for us also, the Bantu.
His answer to the reproach that there was no contact with the Bantu people was himself to move among them and to talk with them in every Bantu territory, in every Bantu township in Zululand, in East and West Transvaal, from the Limpopo to the Transkei, and even in Southwest Africa. There is no single Bantu area that he did not visit, no single responsible Bantu leader to whom he did not patiently listen.
I often traveled with him on official visits, and I shall always remember one particular incident. It was on the 26th of July, 1955. We were on our way back in the plane after a very exhausting visit to Southwest Africa. We traveled throughout the length and breadth of that vast territory and visited every single native area. He listened to everyone who wished to see him and listened patiently. In the plane, he leaned back exhausted, and then Mrs. Verwoerd loosened his tie, took his shoes off, and put both his feet on her lap and stroked them gently. Completely relaxed, he was able to fall asleep. This was the sort of relationship that existed between this man and his noble wife.
September the 3rd, 1958. Dr. H.F. Verwoerd is called as leader of South Africa, her sixth prime minister.
No one is more conscious than I am of the heavy responsibility that has been placed upon my shoulders. Times are serious, and there are tremendous stirrings among the nations. The problems of our country are becoming more involved and are being disturbed by ignorance, interference, and clashes of interest. There are ideals which have to be fulfilled. World trends, economic and otherwise, must be taken into account. Yet I accept my task cheerfully and with firm faith.
He must discharge his task against the mighty storms of uncontrollable world events, against the attacks on his country, which, since the Second World War, have been growing ever more intense.
South Africa is a threat to world peace.
We must force a break between the West and its only stronghold in Africa, South Africa.
The 4th of February, 1960, Cape Town. An address to both Houses of Parliament.
The wind of change is blowing through this continent. And whether we like it or not, this growth of national consciousness is a political fact. And we must all accept it as a fact. And our national policies must take account of it. As a fellow member of the Commonwealth, we always try, and I think we have succeeded, in giving to South Africa our full support and encouragement. But I hope you will not mind me saying frankly that there are some aspects of your policies which make it impossible for us to do this without being false to our own deep convictions about political destinies of free men, to which in our own territories we are trying to give effect.
The need to do justice to all does not only mean being just to the black man of Africa, but also to be just to the white man of Africa. They are the people who brought civilization here, who made possible the present development of black nationalism by bringing the native education, by bringing to Africa industry and development, by inspiring them with the ideals which Western civilization has developed for itself. We have a stake here. This is our only motherland. We settled a country which was bare. The Bantu also settled certain portions for themselves. We believe in providing those rights for those people in the fullest degree, in that part of Africa, which their forefathers found for themselves and settled in. But we also believe in balance. We believe in allowing exactly those same full opportunities to remain within the grasp of the white man in the areas he settled. The white man has made all this possible. We are white, but we are in Africa.
The 20th of January, 1960. 4 o'clock in the afternoon in the House of Assembly in Cape Town. There comes from the Prime Minister, unexpectedly, an historic announcement. The next problem, he declares, that falls within the realm of practical politics is the establishment of a republic. Therefore, he says, the question will be put to the people by means of a referendum. The issue will be decided by a simple majority.
The time is indeed more than ripe for launching the republic. In view of what is happening elsewhere in Africa, it has become increasingly clear that we need that unity which alone will give the strength which is indispensable.
April the 9th, 1960. A bright, sunlit day in Johannesburg. Crowds of carefree people at the Rentmeester show. It's being opened by the Prime Minister. He speaks and is silenced. The first attempt has been made on his life. The silence falls upon the multitude about him and across his country. The people in cities, in villages, on the farms of South Africa, share with him the struggle which follows, and, miraculously, he recovers. Restored to health, his dedication reinforced, he speaks again.
Suddenly, during this past year, in view of many developments, the atmosphere has totally changed, and the Afrikaans-speaking people of South Africa stretch out the hand of friendship to their English-speaking fellow citizens in acceptance of these conditions. The conditions they had formally set out for their willingness to aid in the fulfillment of this, the dearest ideal of the Afrikaner people of South Africa. And the only means by which full and real unity, which is strength to us all, can be brought about. All that was demanded from the one side, all that was demanded from the Afrikaans-speaking side, is being offered. Now, the great chance is there for English-speaking South Africa. If our English-speaking citizens throw in their weight to reconstruct the Union into such a republic, a kind of republic they had formerly accepted, there will be such rejoicing, such deep feeling of unity and common nationhood, that the result in all spheres of life will be immeasurable.
The final voting in the Republic referendum is as follows. For a Republic, 849,958. Against a Republic, 775,878. Majority for a Republic, 74,080.
Rejoicing falls away. A hush falls on the land as the people of South Africa wait anxiously. It is March 1961. In London, at the Commonwealth Conference, Dr. Favart confronts those who would destroy all that through 300 years and more South Africa has achieved. A decision must be taken that touches at the heart of this country and all its people. For this man of integrity, there is no place for expedient compromise. He chooses the lonely, but the honorable course, the only one that can secure South Africa's self-respect.
To judge the morality of a policy, it must be remembered that in all ethics, a balance must be struck between different values, different rights. Absolute right for the one may mean tremendous injustice to the other. Theorists and those who far away can remain unaffected themselves philosophize gladly on the handing over of what is the possession of others. They expect the white South African to give away gradually his country and his possessions, and indeed ultimately his whole nationhood and existence, knowing full well that after the first step the pace will become uncontrollable. Where does morality come in if this is demanded? Both the honor of South Africa and the practical considerations involved for South Africa made the decision inevitable that we should withdraw the indication of our desire to retain membership.
He taught us not to be afraid to stand alone. Today we know that the road out of the Commonwealth was one we were destined to take to reach greater national unity, greater strength, and greater prosperity. Under his guidance, a new republic was born.
In humble submission to Almighty God, who controls the destinies of nations and the history of peoples, who gathered our forebears together from many lands and gave them this their own, who has guided them from generation to generation, who has wondrously delivered them from the dangers that beset them, we, who are here in Parliament assembled, declare that whereas we are conscious of our responsibility towards God and man, are convinced of the necessity to stand united, to safeguard the integrity and freedom of our country, to secure the maintenance of law and order, to further the contentment and spiritual and material welfare of all in our midst, are prepared to accept our duty to seek world peace in association with all peace-loving nations, and are charged with the task of founding the Republic of South Africa.
The 31st of May, 1961. In the historic church in Bosman Street, Pretoria, the first state president of the Republic of South Africa takes his oath of loyalty.
In die teenwoordigheid van die almagtige God en in die volle besef van die hoë roeping wat ek as staatspresident in diens van my volk aanvaar, sweer ek Charles Roberts Swart trou aan die Republiek van Suid-Afrika. May the Almighty, by His grace, guide and sustain me in keeping this oath with honor and dignity. Mag die Almachtige in sy genade my lei en onderskraag om hierdie eed met eer en waardigheid na te kom. So helpe my God.
It was a joyous day. It was the final triumph after the long journey of strife and division. But as he said, the fulfilling of ideals is never the end, for after each completed task, there waits a new beginning, another challenge. Many believed that we did not really mean to lead to freedom the Bantu people of our land until, in Parliament, on the 23rd of January, 1962, again an historic moment broke.
The government will be prepared to grant the Transkei a new constitution, which will create a parliament and a cabinet of ministers for that territory, based on the principles of Western democracy. In consultation with the Bantu leaders of the Transkei, the details of the constitution will be worked out, including to whom the franchise shall be given, and how it shall be exercised, and how its parliament shall be constituted. It will be a wholly black policy and cabinet.
Chief Madam Zuma, I have an important announcement to make to you. I have been informed that the Prime Minister, the Honourable Dr. Babut, announced in Parliament today the Transkei will have a wholly black parliament and a cabinet. The powers entrusted to this parliament are substantial and will be increased. Presumably the Transkei parliament will take control over agriculture, education, health, welfare services, roads, etc. And these will be placed under Bantu jurisdiction forthwith. It is hoped that consultation on the constitution will be completed in time to have the new system in operation during the first half of 1963. Political development, however, must be accompanied by economic development on a substantial scale. I wish you, the chiefs, headmen, and people of the Transkei, success in this great new venture. I would like to give you the assurance that I and my officials will do all in our power to help you in the difficult years that lie ahead. May God bless you and your people and give you guidance and courage to maintain peace and happiness in the Transkei.
To the people of the Transkei, wherever they are, the Prime Minister's statement is highly welcome and will be received with excitement. It is significant of the policy enunciated 13 years ago, and the stage that has been attained reflects the honesty of the government.
The Bantu people of his own country were beginning to accept his policy. But from the outside world, the challenge continued unremittingly. South Africa is challenged in the highest tribunal in the world. On April the 15th, 1961, Ethiopia and Liberia, acting on behalf of the Organization of African Unity, bring 5 main charges against South Africa at the International Court of Justice at The Hague.
Our charge is that the League of Nations mandate over Southwest Africa is still in force, that Pretoria is accountable for the administration of the territory to the United Nations, that South Africa's policy of separate development violates her obligation to promote to the utmost the well-being and progress of Southwest Africa's people, that military bases have been established in the territory, that Pretoria has attempted unilaterally to incorporate Southwest Africa.
That was the challenge. And as always, when the justice of his policy was called into question, Dr. Verwoerd replied, in his own parliament, at Commonwealth conferences, at the United Nations, and now at the World Court. The opportunity to defend the policy before a bench of international judges was offered, and he took it. He assembled a brilliant team of lawyers and researchers. Detailed evidence on every aspect of the life of Southwest Africa was submitted to the court. So overwhelming was the case presented by South Africa that Ethiopia and Liberia withdrew their charge that apartheid is oppressive, either in intent or effect. They then relied solely on the contention that apartheid violates some ill-defined international norm. And then, on July the 18th last, the final vindication. The court finds that Ethiopia and Liberia had no right to bring the case.
In the light of these various considerations,
the court finds that the applicants cannot be considered to have established any legal right or interest appertaining to them in the subject matter of the present claims, and that accordingly the court must decline to give effect to them. For these reasons, the court, by the president's casting vote, the votes being equally divided, decides to reject the claims of the Empire of the Republic of Liberia.
Relief and gratitude well up in the heart of his nation, among the Afrikaans and English-speaking people, and the Bantu. Here's a church leader.
None who pauses to reflect over the victory will not acknowledge that the hand of God directed the battle. The nation's heart, after long suspense and anxiety, overflows with thanksgiving. We pray without ceasing, not forgetting to thank and praise the Lord for prayers answered and delivering you from evil.
A housewife.
I felt proud of the leadership and example set by you personally to the people of this country.
An angler from the Cape.
The hate campaign against us has received a defeat which will take some time to recover. The prayers of my wife and myself have been wonderfully answered.
An Afrikaans Free State wool farmer.
Ons innige dank aan die almagtige rechter vir sy leiding. Bravo vir ons regspan. Sterkte word u toegewens. Ons gebede is verhoor.
A retired Indian Army captain.
We've been awaiting the verdict with trepidation, and the news today has come as one joyful episode in several months of despondency over affairs in England.
A Bantu church leader.
Heartily congratulate government and legal team on victory at Hague World Court.
A Free State magistrate.
Congratulations on the glorious worldwide success in your efforts before the World Court.
An immigrant living in Johannesburg.
Warmest congratulations from my wife and myself for the wonderful and peaceful victory you and your government have won at The Hague. With all our heart, we wish you long life to continue to lead the country of our adoption.
The father of an Ilovo family.
Your speech tonight came from your heart and was Christian. You gave a stern but friendly warning to those countries and people who wish to cut our happiness. They shall not succeed in creating another Vietnam in our beloved country.
He himself said,
in conclusion, I wish to state that though the judgment clearly gives us as a nation cause for gratitude, and while it will be accepted by many as an answer to their prayers, South Africans will not regard it as an opportunity to crow over opponents. We would rather see in it an inducement to devote ourselves anew to the guardianship which we accepted in respect of the lesser developed peoples of South and Southwest Africa.
Others had prepared the way, but it was H.F. Verwoerd who gave practical realization to an ideal deeply interwoven into the character of his people, distilling it into clarity. In the Republic, of which he was the architect, new and deeper meaning was given to the concepts of national unity, national pride, dedication, patriotism. The realization of this must have given him one of the most wonderful moments of his life on the evening of May the 31st, 1966, the fifth anniversary of the Republic, when, at the Fort Trecker Monument, he had his last direct experience of the warm affection of his people.
have learnt that we are. Even if young, a nation in South Africa. That we all belong to that nation. That with pride we may say, this is our country, the country of all of us. Five years is an extremely short time for so strong a feeling to grow after the differences we had before. And the amazing fact of life today is not that there are some who as yet cannot accommodate themselves to this new era, but that so many can.
Suddenly, in the moments before death stepped in, his vision of a commonwealth of South African states, neighbors living in friendship and self-determination, suddenly took life. The vision glowed into reality. For exactly a week ago today, the first meeting took place between him and a black premier, the Prime Minister of Basutoland. It marked the beginning of the development of a new dimension in relations between white and black in South Africa. And now, he's gone. The man who put South Africa on the path to honest thinking about race relations, who by his example and his actions fostered mutual respect between the peoples of our country, who straddled and bridged like a colossus the gap between the Afrikaans and the English-speaking, who, as an upright Afrikaner, won the trust of the English-speaking for the Afrikaner, and, as a personification of Afrikaner aspiration, gave the Afrikaans-speaking the inner strength with which to exorcise baseless suspicion. The man under whose leadership that great civilization in which South Africa shares was spreading north into Africa from the south for the first time. The man who is that civilization's most forceful leader and sustainer. For he cannot die. His thoughts and deeds live on. For generations to come, resounding down the years, his voice will be heard.
National unity will remain an empty term if it does not express itself in a common patriotism and the readiness to serve country and nation, each person in his own walk of life, or to make sacrifices for this whenever necessary.
Thank you. That was Man of Death.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.